This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing, and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of.
Good morning and welcome to this week's Doc and the Guru podcast. The last few weeks, Gordon's been flying solo. I had other commitments, and it's only right and proper that I go and reciprocate. And so today I'm in Cape Town, and I'm flying solo with one of the absolute legends of South African industry for advertising and marketing, communications, Alistair King. And we're going to chat about Alistair's very interesting and highly successful journey. But first up, Alistair, thanks very much for your time and hosting me at King James.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Good to have you here.
And I mean, you know, you've got such a long, illustrious career, built King James into the highly successful agency that it is today. And then obviously the big news of last year was the sale to Accenture Interactive at that stage, Accenture Song Now. So let's just go back. And I mean, I read a while back you were saying your first piece of work was on a typewriter, you know, writing scripts on a typewriter. Today you're part of the world's biggest digital agency. 24 years of King James, lots of success. Please just take us through some of the salient points and some of the highlights.
Sure, it's been a hell of a journey. A very satisfying one, I might add. I started advertising right at the beginning of the computer era. And the first, so I was given a typewriter, my first job, back in 1989, and there was a couple of computers in the agency, but they were really just used by the PAs used to use them, mm-hmm. I guess, and admin people. But everything was done by hand back then. Even ads were made by hand. There was Netraset. It was still the days of Netraset, where the art directors had to be done physically construct an ad using their hands, and that was how I learned advertising. I had to you had to do it manually. There was no computers to edit things. If you recorded a radio ad, you did it and you had to cut in, you had to do it almost in real time and cut in the noises you want or literally cut pieces of tape if you wanted a gap. You know, it was very hands-on, which I am grateful for because, it was a wonderful way to learn advertising. Mm. It was a wonderful way where it was about properly creative.
Yeah.
You know, you got to build things in your head and then in the real world, you got to build it and construct it. And that was awesome. And that took me right up mainly all the way through to the digital era where computers were on everyone's desk, in the mid 90s, I guess. But I moved down. I got at a very young age, way back at varsity, I got it in my head that I wanted to go into advertising and I wanted to be a copywriter. I loved the the notion of spending my life in my own head, conjuring up stuff, you know, and advertising seemed like a nice way to do that. But I also, right before I even got my first job, I kind of decided I wanted my own agency.
Yeah.
And I set myself some quite specific tasks. I said, well, I wanted to be a creative director by 30. And I wanted to start my own agency at 35. And then I just started the learning process. Mm. And it went very well for me, actually. I eventually got into what I thought was the best agency in the country at the time, which was Wrightwood Saltrip and Macon, which became Ogilvy & Mather Wrightwood Saltrip and Macon. And I learned everything I needed to know about creativity in that building. And so I sort of became a creative director at 25, which was quite young. And by 50, I was good to go. I was like, that's it. I don't have to wait till I'm 35.
Yeah.
We're off with Barty to start an agency.
Yeah.
And that was 25 years ago, almost.
Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah? So you were 5 years early on both those predictions of 30 and 35. And then, as you say, now steering at 25 years down the road, building, I mean, a wonderful creative house, not the physical house, that's wonderful that we're sitting in, but I'm talking about the, you know, the creative juices that flow through the house and have nurtured and worked with so many wonderful people. And we'll touch on, you know, some of the great stuff you're doing now on a global stage as well, you know, just looking at the sort of vista that's opened up now with the Essentia song. But yeah, I mean, Alistair, just looking at, and I mean, obviously I've gone through your client list. You've got some fantastic names there. I mean, are there two or three highlights, I suppose, difficult over that period of time that will absolutely stand out? I think I saw your story about Pick and Pay, really the excitement in the early days of winning such a big account. Would that stand out as one of those early highlights?
I mean, look, it's hard to pick highlights because there's so many. A highlight for a creative person is quite a personal thing, because sometimes the highlights are just certain ads that you've made, and sometimes it's whole relationships with clients. When I think back through my career, you know, I know the points, the creative points in my journey that were highlights for me, winning my first ad of the month on Car Magazine, with an ad called Madonna's Book. You know, I was winning Madonna for a title book.
Okay. Yeah.
And that was my first ad of the month. And that was a highlight. And I remember sitting in a bar in Johannesburg, and I heard people behind me basically paraphrasing an ad I'd written for Olsen's Lager. That was a highlight for me. I remember sitting there going, oh my word, these people know my ad.
Yeah.
And I kind of I fell in love with the idea that when you can make great advertising, goes out into the market and people love it so much that they will act it out again.
Yeah.
And it becomes part of culture. It becomes, part of pop culture. And that focused me. So that sort of launched a lifelong obsession with making ads that people would love, rather than ads that were just wallpaper. I really fell in love with that idea. So the highlights for me are literally every single ad we've ever done that's done that.
Mm.
You know, I am proud of the work we've done on brands like Kalula, on Alan Gray, for example, on Sunlum, on Suntum. And Bells, and I give that man a Bells as a highlight in my life.
Yeah.
Because of what they meant for South Africa. You know? And those are the highlights for me rather than the business highlights. So a lot of those business highlights obviously help King James grow and help King James become a different kind of a company. But creative work makes my heart warm. You know?
But as you're saying, I mean, you know, I know you told me the Give the Man a Bowl story on another occasion. And that has become the phrase, you know, that people use. And so it's around the dinner table, the bar, the rugby game, whatever the case. So it must be, as you said, from those early days, when you overhear somebody talking about it today, that's a phrase that is used commonplace, you know, as opposed to say some of the work the beautifully shot work and very powerful work of Alan Gray. Very different market, yes. Very different thing altogether. But I mean, I remember looking at those, the black, and I'm not a creative guy, but you appreciate the way it was shot and the storytelling and tugging at the heartstrings. And, you know, you almost want to go and find your pennies and phone up an investment guide, Alan Gray. You know? So, yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've got this agency, and perhaps it stems a little bit from me and the way I make advertising. But this agency does like to build emotion and build ideas around emotive ideas, and kind of human, powerful human ideas and human stories and stuff. So we've managed to kind of imbue our work with a certain style. I remember way that it was Tony Kunderman, I think it was, said, you can always tell a King James ad. And I phoned him. I said, what do you mean? What do you mean?
Yeah.
I was all offended.
Yeah.
He's saying we're very predictable. He went, no, you can just tell that there's a high degree of emotion wrapped up with the smartness and intellect. Yeah. I went, okay, then it's all right. I'll let you. fine. I'll take that. But I do think we do have a kind of a way of making ads, a signature. And I think that comes from the people, that we've gathered in this building. We don't have a lot of turnover. People come and they stay. And it's incredible how important that is in the company. Because your company develops the knowledge inside people's heads and the memory of how you do things and how you behave with guys and how you, the kind of work you want to do. Is baked into the people rather than you having to train people every time they join. This is how we do things. So I think part of the success of King James has been that, retaining our people, our good people, for long decades, and decades.
Yeah. Especially in this business, you know, I mean, we all know that, you know, the people do move around. They may not leave the industry, but it's not uncommon to go from A to A to B. So that's wonderful. And you know, we'll chat a little bit later about culture, the importance of that, and also success that breeds more success. You know, you want to be part of it. And I mean, the nice thing is when you walk through here, you want the peer grouping to instill part of that culture as opposed to just the leadership. Because, you know, it's not just a top-down thing. It permeates the pores of people who are here because you want to be successful. And it's almost that notion of having the honors blaze or whatever. There are only a few of them. They're really special and precious. And you behave a certain way when you wear the blazer.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. Oddly enough, we've never been an aggressive agency in terms of our creative products. We've never, you know, we were chilled, actually. I never used to say to my creatives, let's win awards. We've got to create opportunities. We're very casual about our creative products, or why we were doing our product. We just knew we wanted to do great work. And so we never pushed, our company to pursue creative awards, and we never hunted for clients that had creative reputations. In fact, it was a business philosophy of ours to actually work with clients that needed you more. Because the theory was that, you know, I remember a great story from Edith Devine, if it's too long, but when we won our second Grand Prix on Alan Gray, the client phoned me and said, Jesus, phone's off the hook.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, why? People congratulating me. He goes, no, from agencies offering their services.
Oh,
so I said, oh, that's a bit rude. I mean, we've just won a second Grand Prix back to back. Why would they be phoning you? And they said, yeah, but obviously everyone's going, well, we can do great work. And I was furious at first, but then I realized how lazy the industry can be.
Yeah.
They'd rather jump on a client that's already winning awards than actually take the clients and win their first award for them, or build a brand from scratch. And the irony is, I think you notice agencies when they take brands that are kind of invisible and make them high profile, make beautiful ads. People go, sheesh, who did that ad? And then the answer is it's good for your reputation. So we've actually enjoyed taking on clients that don't have great credit reputations or great track records. And, you know, that's why I take great pride in brands like Sun Lumman, who weren't a particularly credit agency, performer. And we took them to number one within a year, and again a couple of years later. So that is very satisfying to actually, make your mark, because other marketers see that. Wow, that agency is making a real difference on that brand, which needed it. So we were more attracted to those kinds of brands than we were attracted to the sort of
traditional creation. I understand what you're saying. It's nice to, as you say, move them to a different space, and a space of being noticed and relevant. Listen, changing tack slightly, and thanks very much for that. Looking at the changes and the numerous changes, and maybe one or two things that stayed the same over that time period, can you just take us through something that stand out as some of the major changes, both on the advertising side and into your clients and their marketing, and then the media side as well over the 24, 25 years of King James?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's never been a year where things are not changing. Mm-hmm. I mean, in 1998, when we started King James, the internet was a thing. Mm. People were building websites. The first website companies were doing pretty well at the time. But it wasn't a channel to advertise on. It was a channel in which businesses were being built. And then slowly social media came in, and suddenly social media introduced a whole new dynamic. So agencies or even credit people, were having to think in a completely different way, communication there. And now when you look at where we are now, where the convergence of all the channels, PR, social media, digital, and traditional advertising, and probably things that are yet to be invented, now the metaverse coming into play. You have to literally, as a credit person, be learning constantly. And you can't afford to sort of sit back and go, no, I just really like to like radio ads. Mm. Really like to like TV. Mm. I remember phoning Roger Macon, and I phoned him. I said to him, what did you do before TV arrived in South Africa? You went radio and press, and we did the occasional film for cinemas. Mm. So I said, well, what happened when you were suddenly told to think in film? Did your brain have to learn how to create visually? Because when you're just working with sounds or static images, it's a very particular brain, application of your brain to not have a moving picture in front of you.
Yeah.
Conveys. We went, yeah, we just started making ads. And that's when 3 or 4 years later, everyone was a TV agency.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're in now. Mm. Agencies just have to try things constantly, try new channels, try new ideas, push yourself out, because that's the only way to kind of pull your clients with you. Mm. And that does happen. I think that agencies are, to a large extent, responsible for bringing their agencies, their clients with them into new channels. It's a very kind of learn it together. With a good client, so you learn things by creating things. Mm. And
also the trust there, working with an agency, you need to trust them, and the other way around, to see how fast the world's spinning for them. Because, we've seen a lot of the stats where people talk about strategic agility and how fast things are moving, and is the consumer moving faster than your business, in which case you've got a bit of a problem because you kind of will become a dinosaur quite quickly. But it's about their trust as well. I look back at just some of the agencies I've worked with where someone tells you something, you're not really sure that is going to be where you're going to bet your house. And the opposite is true as well, where you absolutely walk through success and trust, saying to the agency, listen, these guys have got their finger on the pulse of modern culture, more so than perhaps us. Let's bet on this idea.
Look, I think trust is a subject for a whole conversation because, I mean, I've been fortunate to have clients that are like that. They act on trust and they'll run with an idea even if they don't think it's working. But these days, trust is sort of becoming less of a factor. There's a lot of players that take on the role of that. So there's research companies. So there's no trust involved. It's like, come up with some ads, you chuck them into research, and that'll spit out a recommendation. A lot of clients are changing their accounts every 4 years. Mm. There's no trust there. It's just a machine. A procurement process is evaluating value calculations. And I don't think the relationships that used to exist between marketers and agencies can exist quite as well as they used to because of all the kind of the checks and balances in place. But when a client and an agency or a client and a credit person gels, the results are magical. And that's when trust becomes often linked. If you look at all the great advertising made, it often comes down to that.
Yeah.
Where the client's saying, sure, I don't know about this, scares the hell out of me, but I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. Yeah.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
Of course, it has to work for the trust to be earned for the next time.
Sure.
But it's a fascinating thing when it's there because it really does open up the world. You know, the ideas, the agency itself starts getting braver on behalf of our clients. You start throwing the most excited ideas at them because you start to believe that they're going to want that kind of thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as you say, and I think, you know, again, much like you said, trust is a separate topic. The role of procurement is a separate topic as well, you know, in that you're not buying, in my view, and I've made that comment before, a commoditized item. You're not buying two bottles of water or two t-shirts and you argue the grammage and the cost. You're buying a whole lot more when you deal with agencies across the board. And it's been changing tact again. The big news of last year, massive news, was the whole acquisition by Accenture Interactive at that stage. Accenture Song Now. We had Hayden Townsend on our show last year, chatting about the big acquisition of your agency. How's that going? We're steering it a year down the road. Talk us through the practicalities. I mean, I know that, and I've seen the buzzwords, some other consulting houses getting creative, using the phrase creativity to solve complex business problems. Even I can write that, and I'm not a copywriter. How does it really work? I mean, are you guys integrating? Are you moving into similar premises, the same premises, sharing clients? Just take us through the whole notion of Accenture, Song, and MP James.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge process because you're essentially merging our systems into theirs, merging into their systems, which is a big task anyway. I mean, you see the IT guys running around. It's systems, it's stuff that happens behind the scenes that even I'm scared to get involved in. What is exciting is that we've taken – what has made it interesting is we were acquired by Accenture Interactive. And while we were busy migrating ourselves or transforming ourselves into Accenture Interactive, they themselves transformed themselves into Accenture Song.
Yeah.
So we are now migrating into Accenture Song, which is already, it's only been existing for 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
So it's a lot going on. All at the same time while we continue to try to be the great agency that we are. But it's very clear that what we are going to be is a very different kind of agency than we were a year ago. We've got access to skills that we've never had. I mean, the kind of thinking we're doing now is completely different. We're working on global clients. We're pulling in some of the best, metaverse talent in the world to help us pull off projects, for example. The creative landscape has opened up for us in radical ways, and I'm hoping that Accenture, they feel the same sort of surge in energy in their company, because obviously they now have access to our people, and our people are sort of that's what would make it a great union, is when both companies sort of benefit equally by the pulling them together. So Accenture Song is sort of being created as we speak, while we transform ourselves into the Accenture world. But the signs are that it's going to be very exhilarating. It's going to be quite a remarkable thing for us. Sort of battle to imagine what kind of work we're going to be doing this time next year based on what we're already doing now.
Yeah, which is great. And I mean, just off air, you and I were chatting about the integration, although it's a year, it's quite fast in Accenture land in their integration. So as you say, if you just fast forward this movie another year, I'm sure that will be a very, if we have a discussion, very different one. And hopefully, like with any merger, acquisition, whatever the case is, they keep you for the reason they bought you. They don't say, I like you, but if you were just a little more like me, you'll be even better. And I think, as you say, it's always to take the absolute best of both sides, that both parties can grow and be better off in a year, 2 years, and into the future.
Yeah, I think what is important to remember is that companies like Accenture, which were reaching into the communication world. The communication world was sort of reaching into the tech world and the tech development world. And we were both heading towards the same direction. Even King James, we were starting to look at employing different kinds of people to take us closer to Accenture Interactive world. So it was very much part of the compelling reason for James and I to do this was that this just fast tracked it, made it more real, more quickly, and why not do it with the best digital company in the world? And so we're thrilled about that happening. We could have dragged it out, to be honest. I mean, we spent a lot of time talking to communication agencies who have been acquired. Some of them said, it takes 3 years, but it's actually better if you do it fast. We could have said, look, this is too quick. Let's try and stretch it out a bit. But I think we wanted to get busy faster. We wanted to do it in record time. I mean, I think this will be one of the fastest of any agency acquisitions being going on system ever. And I think it can be painful to make it last too long.
Yeah.
So we're up to the short
term. Yeah. And sometimes, you need to go through that pain and get back to the business of business. Your business is as a creative house, as a top creative house. You want your people, besides the IT guys who just do the IT integration. The average guy here doesn't do the IT integration.
Yeah.
He or she produces hopefully fantastic work, etc. And you want them to get to that. They just got to get that house, and I don't mean the physical house. I mean their place, the new place of comfort and latitude, etc.
Yeah, I mean, I think we think of ourselves as a credit house.
Mm.
So, and we at various points in our history, we've exercised creativity in different ways. So, if you look at our PR awards shelf, it's full.
Yeah.
So we. Creativity as it applies to PR, as it applies to social media, as it applies to digital, and it's the journey continues. This house will continue to apply high creative thinking to a whole new type of business thinking, and so that's now our goal over the next 2 years as Accenture Song, is to put on the table a whole bunch of work that shows clients what's possible when you throw tech and creativity together and business solutions together. You do come up with a very different kind of product.
Yeah.
And so we're all in that process of creating those, that new kind of creativity.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I read somewhere, and I quote, you were saying you're in the business of smart creative solutions, not just cute executions. And I think this is one of those things where you marry, the smartness and requirements of modern day society. We spoke about the world perhaps at client level spinning differently to, or for that matter, the extension song. Marrying all of that in a smart execution that may or may not be a cute execution and hopefully a memorable and breakthrough one, but it's certainly based on the smart and the creativity mix.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot coming into play because, creativity is largely intuition. It's a sense of knowing what consumers want to hear or what consumers need to hear. Mm. And I think that continues to be a critical component of business is being able to know to give consumers exactly what they need, even when they don't know they need it. Mm. So that's what we kind of once you start putting it in the room. People, it's all about who's in the room, I guess. When those people, different skills, people are able to think about a problem, the solution is always going to be more interesting than in another situation. So that's what we're doing is we're building the team that has the right people around the table to really create a different kind of solution for our clients. So nothing's changing. What we do is going to change.
Sure. And this guy, I think, you now spoke about some great, exciting global projects with fantastic skills. I mean, you were saying to me that some of your people there are absolutely world-class, can work anywhere in the world, and will not only hold their own, but probably outshine their peer grouping in terms of creativity.
Yeah, look, I don't want to lose any of my people, but the truth is South Africans are hugely in demand everywhere on earth. Mm-hmm. And if you look, someone should do a study, if you look at the number of South Africans in leading credit positions around the world, it's staggering. Yeah. And it's working against us, but we are losing talent, mm-hmm. increasingly so. And I would like to believe that being a great agency here will keep some of that talent here. Mm-hmm. I don't want my people to be slingshot into other agencies around the world. I want them to stay here. Yeah. In fact, I want to keep some of this talent here. Mm-hmm. So that is just purely my aim is to build South Africa's reputation mm-hmm. in the world so that actually the agencies are looking to us to work on their business. It's actually happening already. We've just pitched on a piece of work with Droga 5 in New York. We were involved in the kind of work where we did it from here. There's several examples actually where we've been asked by the network to get involved, because of our reputation in certain sectors. So that's amazing news. Yeah. That means that I can actually hire people in South Africa to come work here to work on global business rather than lose them to an office in Chicago or New York or Toronto. Everyone seems to be going to Toronto. Mm-hmm. I'd like to kind of be a counter magnet for that. Mm-hmm.
But it is nice, as you say, if you can work on big pieces of work that say somebody has mentally reached their limit sort of in South Africa in terms of scale and scope. But it's so good, instead of moving, as you say, Toronto as an example, Tokyo, whatever the case may be, they can work there because they've got that magnification effect now of saying, I'm now working on a truly global piece of work. So again, well done, and hopefully that continues to grow through that extensive network.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a balance, actually, to be honest. I mean, we love the work we do on our clients here. I don't want this agency to be so distracted that it doesn't continue to do this great work with our clients. That's the challenge for me is to make sure that we continue to be a famous agency in South Africa, because that's what I love doing and what I love to continue doing. But of course, the appeal of working on global brands, is what's pulling a lot of our talent out of the country. And if we can reverse that trend and say, well, no, you don't have to be, just, you know, do it from here, and we'll show you how. So that, yeah.
Well, hopefully, as you say, you both continue to produce great, and I'm sure you will, in the local market, but also that opportunity for those people who are keen to, you know, expand their horizons. Alistair, as we're moving towards the close, and I mean, the season's been wonderful chatting with you, and we could chat a lot longer. Just one or two lessons, maybe personal lessons or business lessons that you could share with younger listeners out there. What would you do the same or differently?
It's such a tough question. I think, you know, it's a remarkable life, advertising. It's a great way to be creative, but with business intent. You know what I mean? I would not do it any differently personally. I've lived self-actualized in every respect, being a creative person and in advertising. And, you know, I think when you built an agency for 24 years, which was sort of a record anyway, I think we were the longest standing independent. I don't know how to help it. You know, I don't know what I would do differently. Let me just read people like this. I'm giving you a terrible answer. Do you want me to defeat the boss?
No,
you can edit this.
At the end of the day, I think, you know, from our point of view, and I say our listeners' point of view, if you feel that there's very few things, if any, you do differently, that's fantastic, because a lot of the times people feel that they've made monumental mistakes and they've learned from it. Some people say, no, it's been iterative. You know, I've done a little bit of this, and your point is, you know, you didn't set out to be a digital agency years ago because digital didn't exist. So, you know, it was a few pieces here and there. And it's one day leads to the next. Oh, it's a year we do this. Yeah. 2 years. Oh, geez, we can write some PR releases. So, you know, and I guess that's how things morph.
I think life is, I do get the feeling that young people are quite impatient now. They want to know, they want to achieve certain goals very fast. And I was no different in the sense that I set myself goals, but I was quite practical, actually. I knew when I was 25 and I was a creative director of 25 that I was not a creative director. Clients saw a little kicky. I didn't have the credentials to stand my ground. I didn't have the confidence. I was being mauled by them, quite frankly, because I wasn't a real creative director yet. Yeah. And that's why I actually went backwards. I wanted to become a junior copywriter, the best agent in the country, to get back to creative director, which I did by 28. So I got there, but I had to go backwards knowing that I wasn't ready for it. And I think it's the same. I calculated when I was ready for business. I knew when I had enough gravitas, enough reputation in the marketplace, and my name was out there. I had good work. I knew that if I showed up in a meeting, a CEO might listen to me because, you know, the reputation I've built. That was key, because I think a lot of people just give themselves titles, walk in, and they're not ready yet. And their clients, just whoever they're talking to, has no reason to believe them if they haven't proven themselves yet. So I've only ever done anything when I felt I was ready to do it. And I remember saying to James, actually, I said, I looked around and our ambitions were not great. And we didn't set out to change the world. We just wanted to be in to have our own place. And I remember looking around and saying to James, I think I can pretty much beat all the agencies credibly, except for the great one at the time, which was Olivia Mather, and Jupiter's was doing very well. But I felt that I was better than the rest in Cape Town, which was enough motivation for me to say, let's go and build an agency. Yeah. And we've almost done that at every step, patiently. You know, we haven't set ourselves ridiculous targets. We never had a single budgetary goal in the company in its whole history. Not once we said this year we want to increase by 5%, 10%, whatever. We just made ads, you know? And making better ads and making better ads and making better ads was the goal.
Yeah.
And I think that made us a more profitable business. We weren't obsessing about money. We were obsessing about work.
Yeah.
And we were walking away from clients who were abusive to us, because we had no need to. We weren't targeting anything. Mm-hmm. And so I've fortunately have had been lucky enough to do it completely on our own terms. And I've never had to sort of pain myself through anything in a business sense, because we just naturally became better and better and better agency, and things always went right because the work was right.
Yeah.
As a philosophy, when things go wrong, which they have, we've lost clients here and there. We've been hit badly on a few business occasions. But my response to that is to sit down with the brief in the agency and make a great piece of advertising on that brief and on the other briefs in the agency. Because my theory is that in 3 months' time or 4 months' time, when that piece of work goes out into the marketplace, people are going to go, oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And you've in a way, you've mitigated what you're kind of going through at the time.
Mm.
So the best response to a bad situation is to actually do a great piece of work. So that your name, it's just a little sort of mechanism or handling mechanism that I've had.
But it's keeping the main thing, I think, you know, you're saying that your main thing here is producing great work. And so there are going to be hiccups along the way, and some are a little bit more than just a hiccup, but it's still to keep that as the paramount thing. And hopefully that'll continue, and I'm sure it will, and be even more exponential with the whole Accenture song. But I mean, some valuable lessons there, just paraphrasing back. I mean, it's so important for people, not just youngsters, to sometimes look in the mirror and realize yourself and be realistic. Yeah. And don't believe the business cards. One of the most dangerous things in the world is a business card.
Yeah.
Because you actually believe it, you know? And it may not be backed up with talent and a track record. So I think that's such an important lesson, going sideways or backwards in a career that is not always going to be straightforward.
Yeah.
I think today, and specifically, and I call it, well, I suppose many people do, the Kardashian factor, you know, of instant gratification. You can be a billionaire at 21. That's not for everybody. And I think it's being realistic, knowing when to look through the window at opportunity and knowing when to look at the mirror and say, hold on, can I match the opportunity? Because sometimes there's a disjoint. And you don't think so, you know, you overestimate your ability. And I think it's interesting, at a young age, you work that out. And then at 28, you said, hold on, the opportunity and the mirror is there's congruency now.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I've always had, the quality which I've always had, is I've always believed that I wanted to be able to have substance. Mm-hmm. And it's an important distinction, because smoke and mirrors, we seem to be in a period of time where smoke and mirrors are enough, social media and the digital, and how you appear to be matters. But in my experience, what you are is always going to trump. So substance always trumps hype.
Yeah.
I've always believed that. And I've always had an honest understanding with myself when I'm hyping myself.
Mm.
So I always resort back to what, you know, like building myself from a substance point of view. I think when you're young, I remember someone said to me once, you know, they said, you know, no one expects anybody to be successful before 20. In fact, most of the time, people in high positions don't even take under 30 years seriously, because you're not old enough to be experienced enough yet.
Mm.
So, and I remember that going, oh, thank God, I wasn't trying to be successful at 28.
Yeah.
But it gave me a sense of calm to know that actually I'm not going to peak at 30 or 28, 30. I'm going to not even peak at 35 or 40. I might peak at 50 or 65 or 70. Who knows when you're going to peak?
Yeah.
It's not important. As long as you build yourself and you make something substantial to offer yourself, you're going to always be successful, because people are recognizing you that you're the real deal, not, you know, not smoke and mirrors. And I think younger people could probably be more patient with themselves, you know, in that regard.
And I think that's, I mean, that's a wonderful way for us to end. I mean, I'd love to chat more and continue, but I think, you know, just to be patient, in today's fast-moving world, you know, of instant gratification, always on social media, you know, all of that stuff is to take a little bit of a step back, and look at yourself critically. So, Alistair, thanks very much for your time. I really, really appreciate it, and your insights. And, you know, obviously I wish you and your whole team all the best, the integration with Hayden and his team at Accenture Song. And, yeah, may it go from strength to strength.
Thanks, Doc. Appreciate it.
So, guys, that's another episode of the Doc and the Guru for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Fantastic news out of King James, one of the leading agencies, and we will watch with interest to see how they move forward with Accenture Song. Until next week, I'll see you then.
And so that was another episode of the Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views, and certainly will respond, and hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc, and it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, at Mzanzi Media, and I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on in the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo, and we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.